The Central Pacific attacks the Sierra Nevada, 1865. The Sierra Nevada are the principal topographical feature of the American Far West. They are a massive granite block. On the eastern front, they rise from 4,000 feet or more in the north to 7,000 feet or more in the south. The western face is some 50 to 60 miles broad, with a gradual rise of 2 to 6%. The summits, many enveloped in glaciers, run from 6,000 feet in the north to 10,000 feet west of Lake Tahoe in the center. There are 12 peaks exceeding 14,000 feet in the south. If California was the land of superb natural bays, gold, silver, and other minerals for the picking, fertile agricultural lands, the best weather anywhere in the continent for humans, animals, and plants, and no warlike Indian tribes to resist the coming of the Americans, it was also a land that the Americans could scarcely get to or out of because of that granite block between them and the eastern United States. It was as if those mountains had been designed to divide California permanently from the remainder of the country. They were too big, too snowy, too steep, too rugged, too extensive, too formidable ever to be crossed easily. The mountains challenged even humans on foot, as the fate of the Donner Party, 1846-47, made clear. The idea of driving a railroad over or through the Sierra Nevada was so audacious as to suck out the breath of those who heard it discussed. The audacity of Ted Judah in proposing it, even though he had found a place where there was just one summit to cross instead of two, and of the Big Four in taking him up on it, was monumental. Nothing like it had been done anywhere, not east of the Mississippi River over the Appalachians, not in Europe, not in Asia, nowhere. Charles Crocker, who proposed to do it, later said, "People laughed at the time of building a railroad across those mountains." To get a locomotive through that granite would require tunnels. Without them, no locomotive could get over the summits, even at the passes or with switchbacks. Tunnels through granite had no precedent. To make it happen, a way had to be found. Early in 1865, the Central Pacific went to work on the apparently unsolvable problem. First, money had to be found. That seems hard to believe for a much-needed and much-anticipated railroad, whose president was also governor of the state of California, a railroad with millions in bonds pledged to it from the federal government, a railroad that could sell its own stocks and bonds, a railroad that had Collis Huntington raising money in Boston and New York. But it was so. A railroad that was building in the land of milk and honey, gold and silver, needed money. Nevertheless, there was no money at the beginning of 1865, only horrendous expenses. As soon as the UP and the CP went into the market for rail, they could use only iron made in the United States by act of Congress as decreed in the Pacific Railroad bills, the prices jumped 80%, from $41.75 to $76.87 per ton, and by 1865 had jumped again to $91.70 per ton. Shipments via the Panama Isthmus cost $51.97 per ton, meaning that rail delivered at San Francisco cost $143.67 per ton. Then came the charges for transfer from ships at San Francisco to the lighter, then unloading at Sacramento, then for transportation up the Sacramento River. Locomotives went up in price, too. Two engines in 1865 cost the CP $79,752. The CP paid it, more or less gladly, because, as Assistant Chief Engineer Lewis Clement explained to Leland Stanford, the power of those engines is absolutely necessary to supply materials needed for construction. Without these engines, there will be delay.